Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen recording, and it is 3:18 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is November 3rd, and the Bank of England released their interest rate decision in here today, and they rose rates by 75 basis points. But the contrast with the Federal Reserve couldn't be more stark. Whereas the Federal Reserve is saying that they're going to lean on the side of over-tightening because they think of that as a smaller risk than under-tightening. The Bank of England has taken the opposite opinion, and they're worried about over-tightening and then creating a recession that would be difficult to pull out of. So they're already anticipating a recession, and they haven't been shy about talking about that, and they anticipate perhaps 500,000 people losing their jobs. And they are basically saying that they're going to pick a slower glide path downwards from high inflation that might take 2 years. So the pound is down heavily, and this is a very clear downward dynamic, and it suggests that the rebound from the low in late September has gone about as far as it's going to. What is also, I think, notable is that it's encountering resistance in the region of the low from 2020. And I think we could give that a bit of room and say that 120 is about as high as the pound is likely to go at any point over the next 12 months. So there is obviously now the potential that it's going to go lower from here because the Federal Reserve is going to continue raising rates. Personally, I think that they're going to push rates above where they were in 2008. That to me would be, I think, a bit of a Rubicon for the Federal Reserve. So we're at 4% right now. Interest rates in 2008 were about 5.25%. I think that's we could easily get to that level by the first quarter of next year. And then subsequently, I think the much bigger question isn't about how high interest rates go during this tightening cycle. It's about how low do they go afterwards. And I just think it's unlikely that interest rates are going back down to that 0 to 25 basis point level. I think it is much more likely that interest rates will probably bottom out around 2% and then subsequently rise faster. Because we've now seen that central bank psychology has changed. Until this year, they were willing to sit idly by and they weren't really concerned about asset price inflation, because it wasn't falling inside the very narrow way that they measure inflation. So that's now over, and it's more likely that they're going to be a lot more alert to inflationary pressures in future, and that they'll be swifter in terms of their reactions. Now, when we think about the yield curve spread, there's one thing that it very clearly demonstrates. If we look at it over a long enough time period, and it's that following an inversion, we get approximately 300 basis points of easing. So they cut interest rates aggressively. Now, we couldn't have that in 2019 because there simply wasn't enough of an interest rate cushion to cut. But we have it now. With the incredibly swift pace of interest rate hikes means that they have ample room to cut without having to go to zero. And I think that that is what we're going to see. Now, the most important thing to bear in mind is that historically, at least, it's when the yield curve spread starts turning higher following an inversion. That's usually when we get the worst of the selling pressure. We can think that the yield curve spread was marching higher from the middle of 2007, but the market didn't, in fact, crash until about October of 2008. So that was already at a point where the yield curve spread had gone back all the way up to over 200 basis points. When we then think about the wider market, we had what I consider to be a rather odd day today. The market was in positive territory for a brief period following a drop in early trading, and then towards the end of the day gave up all of the advance. And I can only conclude that investors are thinking that we're still likely to have a benign outcome and that a soft landing is assured. But I think that a soft landing is very unlikely. When we think about just how extraordinary the quantity of money that was printed was, and now they're taking it away because they're worried about inflation, and it's not just a single country, but everywhere that interest rates are rising and balance sheets are, and excuse me, central bank balance sheets are coming back down. This is really seriously problematic. Then let's just think about some of the companies that have been the standout by the dip opportunities for the last decade. And Amazon had been one of those. But now we have very clear top formation characteristics, top formation completion characteristics with the type 3 top, the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, the period of right-hand extension, and now it's breaking lower. And the next area of potential support is maybe at 75, or then perhaps at 50. So this is really quite significant. And then let's just think about the PE, because they didn't have an estimated PE for the end of the year. So that implies they're not going to be profitable. And the historic PE is at 90. So this isn't a cheap share. Now let's think about ratios. Well, the price to sales ratio isn't especially fruitful here because Amazon's really quite a low margin business, and that has been one of the big issues with it for all this time, that it had to grow aggressively because that was how it was going to achieve its margin. And without the growth, then Amazon doesn't have margins. And what they're starting to do now is close warehouses, and they're telling lots of sellers that they're not going to have as much space to store inventory. And Mrs. Tracy discovered that this morning. She was going to send off a load of inventory and found that there was nowhere to put it in Amazon. So this is Amazon preparing for a really rather dire Christmas season. And Christmas season's looking dire for Amazon means that they're going to be dire for everywhere else too. Costco has very clear head and shoulders top formation characteristics, and it's now pulling back from this $500 area. And again, this is another share that's expensive. It's not like Costco is not a great company, and it has a wonderful record of rewarding investors with just very predictable cash flows and an easy balance sheet to understand. But the valuation at an estimated PE of 33 is excessive for what is basically a supermarket. So these are, I think, rather difficult issues here, that the consumer discretionary sector really does look like it's under duress. And Walmart, which is a dividend aristocrat, has got this massive reaction against the prevailing trend, the failed upside break, the massive reaction, now the period of right-hand extension. This looks like a candidate for significant downside. So this all implies really significant duress on the consumer. And yet there are still 10 million jobs outstanding. There are millions of baby boomers have already retired. If you look at the number of people who've retired in the last decade, it's about 3% of the population, which is about 10 million people or 9 million people. And there are 10 million job openings. And I'm not sure that that's really coincidence, that perhaps we just are looking at the fact that it's been very difficult to replace these highly experienced people who have retired. And then you don't have the same number of people entering the workforce, although the workforce has expanded. And then the number of skilled immigrants has gone down significantly from over 1 million a year in 2016 to less than 200,000 this year. So this is a dislocation within the labor market that's not easily going to be fixed. So the only way to close the gap between the number of people who are unemployed and the number of available jobs will be to kill off demand and reduce the number of jobs that are available and increase the number of people who are unemployed. And then you'll get a narrowing of that mismatch. But that implies a recession. And aiming for a, most of the time, they aim for a soft landing. And soft landings are like, well, I was thinking of something that's not politically correct, but let's just say they're very rare. So then when we think about the wider global market, well, India is very well placed to benefit over the next decade. And the Nifty index is pausing now in the region of its peak. Now, if we move into a deeper process of consolidation and a further leg lower in the evolving bear market on Wall Street, then India is not going to be immune indefinitely. But it is likely to be one of the places where people will want to invest early. And there's a good reason for that. India has got the demographics. There really aren't that many countries with the scale and the sheer scale in numbers of people that could potentially be employed in manufacturing. India has a services sector and it has higher end manufacturing like pharmaceuticals. What it skipped over because of the communist or collectivist legacy was low end manufacturing. But low-end manufacturing is coming to India. And the I think it is really quite impressive that when we look at the global PMI, and I'll post this chart in Comment of the Day today, but what we have clear evidence of is that in India, manufacturing is expanding. And Taiwan and the Czech Republic and Poland are contracting, but China is also starting to contract and contracting faster than the rest of the world. And manufacturing is improving in the USA still, although the services PMI is negative. In Indonesia and Australia, they're also still positive. Of course, Indonesia is another Asian country with a large young population and also a significant commodity exporter. So these, I think, are where we can anticipate there will be clear potential for outperformance over the next few years. So I think when we think about the wider environment, we're still likely to see a contraction in global economic activity. And that's going to feed through into an increasing number of sectors. The number one sector that has been immune from selling pressure for the last 2 years has been energy. And that's resulting in a concentration of activity. Lots of people are And I've seen lots of marketing material. Lots of marketers are trying to say that there's going to be an energy crisis and that it's going to be the only sector that you can invest in. And certainly prices have been stable. But how much of that is because energy has been the only sector that was positive for the last 2 years? And yes, we have this war in Eastern Europe, and an extraordinary amount of money has been printed in the last year to try and mitigate some of the threat from the cutoff of Russian oil and gas. Now, the Freeport LNG export facility in the USA is going to open this month. So that's going to bring back online quite significant volume of export capacity for LNG. Then there's it's I think it's important to look at the individual components. So Excelerate Energy has got large numbers, or well, I guess there aren't large numbers. It's got a significant market share in floating regasification units. So the share is easing back from the upper side of the range right now. Golar LNG is also a provider of these floating regasification units, and the share has been steadier and firming in what looks like a first step above the base. And Europe is going to have to be buying natural gas, and it's quite likely that we're at a higher plateau, that prices are firming right now in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, they could still halve and still be above the long-term base formation. So, I think this is an interesting point right now. If prices can hold at this level, then it's likely to be a low of at least medium-term significance. But if they fail here, well, then the next area of potential support is a lot closer to 75 or 50. And Europe is heading into a recession, and therefore demand will suffer. So then the market will contract. And all of the buying that took place in June, July, and August was price insensitive. Well, now that the storage facilities are full, then buying is going to be price sensitive once more. And the restocking is going to start much sooner next year. And subsequently, there will be a lot more interest in building out storage facilities in Europe. So everyone is talking about that, oh, this year was worse and next year will be even worse. Because the threat is so large, then it's more likely that prices will just come back down because there will already be solutions in place. And that's what the price is telling us. The price is still trending lower, even though it is at a potential area of support. And the UK price has also moderated, and the Rough storage facility is being reopened. So that's going to increase the UK's ability to weather this issue with supply. Now, that big gap higher was a contract roll, so it's really just reflecting the contango, but prices are starting to ease back once more. And then US natural gas prices are also starting to ease back. We've had quite a volatile few days. It really is one day up and one day down. One thing that I think is underappreciated is the risk of deflation. When we have balance sheet runoff, it's normal that at the beginning of the balance sheet runoff phase, that yields rise. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. The balance sheet runoff really only started about 3 months ago. And it's only slow to progress because the principal on TIPS has been rising so quickly. But when inflation starts to roll over, it's going to represent economic weakness. And it's going to be in response to earnings falling at corporations. So that's problematic for the economy. And it's going to start to spark deflationary fears. So I'm not thinking that deflation is going to be achieved without a recession. It'll be achieved because of a recession. But then bond yields will come back down, and the inflationary pressures will be replaced with deflationary pressures. So then we're going to see more monetary easing. But you need to get the recession first. And thinking that there's going to be a pivot before that happens, I think, is a wasted effort. Then I think it's also rather interesting right now that the Chinese technology sector has been quite a bit steadier over the last couple of days. So this is the CQQQ in the USA, and it's up over 10% this week. But the sequence of lower rally highs is still in place. And China, having embarked on this COVID zero policy for 2 years, I just think of it as inconceivable that they're going to abandon it when the number of cases is rising. I mean, they're going to have to at least wait until this current wave subsides before abandoning their quarantining efforts. And who's to say that they'll even do it then? Because we have to consider the fact that the lockdowns serve dual purposes. So one is that they slow the spread of the coronavirus, and the second is that they offer the government so much more control over the population. And once control has been gained, then they're going to be reluctant to let it go. So this doesn't look like anything other than a little bit of short covering rally, and unlikely to manifest itself into a sustained rebound. When we think about the incredible outperformance of the mega cap shares, and let's just remind ourselves that the Fangman plus Tesla is only 8 shares, and out of a universe of thousands, and they had a combined market cap of 12 trillion at the beginning of this year, and it's down to 7.3 trillion now and trending down. So this looks like the end of an era, and as it's encountering resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, then that means the buy-the-dip impetus is not working. I think the most significant thing one can do is to avoid owning those 8 shares. One of the biggest mistakes people make after a big bull market, even after selling out at the top, it's to think, well, they've gone down enough, so now I'll buy. And then the price goes down even more. And a lot of the profits that were gained, even after getting out at the top, are eroded by the bear market. These companies did spectacularly well in a low interest rate environment where there was money for everything. And now that's no longer true, and the future bull market is going to be more likely to be infrastructure oriented, more about climate orientation, and I think nationalization of energy. Certainly the national interest of developing energy independence, and lots of infrastructure duplication, a complete reorientation of globalization. I don't think that globalization is ending, but that we are going to move more towards a multipolar world where China and Russia will be on one side, basically NATO and the OECD will be on the other, and then there will be significant countries like Saudi Arabia and India in the middle. But the The reality then is that we'll have a different investment sectors doing better, and those that did best in the last bull market are unlikely to do best in the next. And until we start to see the dollar rolling over, then gold prices are going to remain under pressure. So the price was off the low in here today, but I think the challenges are that the euro is going to remain weak, the pound is going to remain weak, and the dollar will remain firm. And ultimately, no sector will be immune from selling pressure in a recession. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.